you ever feel that God is invisible? That he is absent from the world? That he might not be active right now? Do you ever wonder how we should act in a world where others seem more powerful? Where governments seem to be in total control? Where God's people get sidelined? Did you know there's a Bible book all about that? Over the next few weeks, I'm going to be sharing my sermon series from the book of Esther. Esther's a book where God's name doesn't even come up once, but when we look carefully, God is extremely active. It's a book with conspiracies, misuse of power, supposed coincidences, relationships, and far more. Are you intrigued? Well, let's dive in, shall we? So Esther chapter 1, verse 10 to 22. On the seventh day, when King Xerxes was in high spirits from wine, he commanded the seven eunuchs who served him, Mehuman, Biztha, Harbona, Bigtha, Agbagtha, Zetha, and Carcass, to bring before him Queen Vashti, wearing her royal crown, in order to display her beauty to the people and nobles, for she was lovely to look at. But when the attendants delivered the king's command, Queen Vashti refused to come. Then the king became furious and he burned with anger. Since it was customary for the king to consult experts in matters of law and justice, he spoke with the wise men who understood the times and were closest to the king: Karshina, Shetha, Admatha, Tarshish, Meres, Marcina, and Memucan, the seven nobles of Persia and Media who had special access to the king and were highest in the kingdom. According to law, what must be done to Queen Vashti? He asked. She has not obeyed the command of King Xerxes that the eunuchs have taken to her. Then Memucan replied to the presence of the king and the nobles, Queen Vashti has done wrong, not only against the king, but also against all the nobles and the peoples of all the provinces of King Xerxes. For the queen's conduct will become known to all the women, and so they will despise their husbands and say, King Xerxes commanded Queen Vashti to be brought before him, but she would not come. This very day, the Persian and Median women of the nobility who have heard about the queen's conduct will respond to all the king's nobles in the same way. There will be no end of disrespect and discord. Therefore, if it pleases the king, let him issue a royal decree and let it be written in the laws of Persia and Media, which cannot be repealed, that Vashti is never again to enter the presence of King Xerxes. Also, let the king give her royal position to someone else who is better than she. Then when the king's edict is proclaimed throughout all his vast realm, all the women will respect their husbands from the least to the greatest. The king and his nobles were pleased with this advice, so the king did as Memucan proposed. He sent dispatches to all parts of the kingdom, to every province in its own script, and to each people in their own language, proclaiming that every man should be ruler over his own household, using his native tongue. Well, we started our series in Esther, and we saw that Esther is written into a situation that is missing God. It's missing God in two ways. God appears to be missing from the book of Esther. He's hiding his face. And people are missing God by filling in the gap with other things. And this evening, our passage is calling us to think about power. To look at power and ask how we should think about it in a world that is missing God. How should we think of power in a world that is missing God? I mean, power affects us in many ways, doesn't it? There is the temptation to power, a temptation to try and gain power for ourselves, to be the one that everyone looks up to, the one who can command and control everything. And then there's the other side, the side of being controlled, the side of being under power, the side that can feel hopeless as situations seem out of control, lacking power to change things, as it seems that the tide has turned and those in power are now against what you stand for. How should we think of power in our world? You see, those concerns are the same concerns as this book. The people reading Esther would have been thinking the same thing, sitting in a land occupied by a strong world power, surrounded by other nations who are stronger than them. And the author of Esther calls them and calls us to think about this. Now we met, didn't we, King Xerxes? He's the king here. King Xerxes, he appears to be the most powerful man in the entire world. Yeah, as we're going to see this evening, he simply is a rich fool. And his foolishness doesn't end well. In fact, many Jewish commentators point out that his name in the text, in the Hebrew language, King Ahasuerus, if you translated it, would sound pretty much like King Headache in English. And there are many, many headaches in this book, not just because of all the drinking. So how should we think of power in a world that is missing God? Well, the answer is this. Although the world missing God seems powerful, it shows itself in its foolishness. Although this world missing God appears all powerful, it shows itself in its foolishness. Let's see how that works, shall we? First thing to see, King Xerxes seems powerful. Do you remember King Xerxes from last time? He was the ruler of the known world. This is the Empire of Persia, historically, but we might as well call it the world, because it covers pretty much the entire known world. For the people of the time, you couldn't escape it, and you wanted to be part of it. And we noted that throughout the chapter of Esther, descriptions normally used of God are being used of King Xerxes. His power, his splendour are being described in ways that the Bible usually reserves for God's power, for God's splendour. Xerxes seems to be in control of everything. In a world that is missing God, well, Xerxes seems to have taken God's place. And there's more of the same in this section. Just have a look at the text with me. Notice the amount of sevens. Did you see them in the text? Verse 10. On the seventh day. I mean, that should ring a bell, shouldn't it? God created, and on the seventh day. We're going to see what happens with King Xerxes on that day in a minute. He has seven eunuchs, doesn't he? Seven eunuchs on his staff team. It's the perfect number for what he needs. The passage also uses the word all the way through. It comes up seven times. This has all been carefully crafted, carefully put together. And it all adds up to be a picture of a perfect, complete rule of a godlike king, King Xerxes. He's meant to look powerful. He has an abundance of stuff, doesn't he? Remember the feast? He has abundant wine, abundant food. There's golden goblets, and each one of those goblets is different to each other. He's showing off his wealth. He's presenting, most likely here to a war council, that this is it. This is the kingdom to be part of. This is the kingdom that rules the world. And he shows off all his belongings to them. And we're still in that zone here in verses 10 to 22. And there's one more thing that Xerxes owns that he wants to show off. Did you see it? Have a look at verses 10 and 11. On the seventh day, when King Xerxes was in high spirits from wine, he commanded the seven eunuchs who served him, you see their names there, to bring before him Queen Vashti, wearing her royal crown, in order to display her beauty to the people and nobles, for she was lovely to look at. If you look carefully at the way Vashti there is described, she's described just like the riches of verse 4. Xerxes wanted to show off his riches. Xerxes wants to show off his lovely to look at queen. He wants to show you what he has, to remind you how great he is. He has everybody serving him, and he has everybody bringing things to him. You see here, the point is clear. Xerxes seems powerful. He is the power of the world. The power this world has is summarised, contained, wrapped up, and it's all in this one man, Xerxes. All he has to do is click his fingers, and things seem to happen. Well, almost. Because in this chapter, we see a second point, don't we? Xerxes is actually a rich fool. See, the author of Esther doesn't leave us admiring Xerxes for too long. Instead, the rest of this chapter goes on to show us that Xerxes is a rich fool. See, in every situation, missing God leads to messed up morals. Missing God leads to messed up morals. If you remove God from the equation, the foundation, the morals and standards are built on erodes. The beauty of creation's order disappears. And we see that dramatically in this passage this evening. I mean, there are patterns here that should stand out to us. Firstly, verse 10. On the seventh day, it's the day that God rested, Genesis 1, we find Xerxes resting. enjoying what he has created. And we're told he's in high spirits from wine. That phrase, to be in high spirits from wine, is only used two other times in the Old Testament. And one of the men it's used of is literally called fool. And in both situations, the women involved with those men, well, they end up in being not a very good position. And we see that relationship here, don't we? Just notice how well the relationship between king and queen is going. He has to send 7 eunuchs to go speak to her. Here you go, we're not having our marriage enrichment day right now, but here's some advice for you. Speak in person to your wife. That is important. You see, we get the sense here that ethics are already wonky. The morality in this worldwide power is dubious. The wisdom here is lacking. What is Vashti's response? What is her response to coming and being an object on show for the king? Verse 12. But when the attendants delivered the king's command, Queen Vashti refused to come. Then the king became furious and burned with anger. You can imagine the scene in the court, can't you? She said, what? Our mighty King Xerxes has been denied? I thought he's in charge of the world. Can't even get his wife to come into the room. See, the king who seems to rule the world, he can't even control his wife. He can't make his wife come and show herself. And so Xerxes becomes furious. He burns with godlike anger. In reality, the powerful king is left looking like a toddler having a hissy fit. What happens next? Verse 13 onwards. He speaks to his wise men. So he doesn't know what to do. So he gets another 7 men, his wise men, to come and help him. Now they concoct this plan to prevent the word getting out about Vashti's refusal. Did you see how they're going to do it? Verse 20. We're going to stop the word going out by sending out a word about Vashti's refusal. Then when the king's edict is proclaimed throughout all his vast realm, all the women will respect their husbands, from the least to the greatest. What if the world hears that the queen has refused a king? You know what? We need to stop that. Tell you what, let's send a letter to every part of the kingdom, to every province in its own language, and tell everyone in their own language about what's happened. It's bonkers, isn't it? It's absolutely madness. He's a rich fool. And I mean a law that tells women of the kingdom to respect their husbands. How's that going to go down? I mean, that's already foolish, isn't it? Firstly, I mean, how's that going to be enforced? Knock, knock, knock. Excuse me, missus, are you respecting your husband? Okay. It's ludicrous, isn't it? And secondly, because it's trying to legislate a relationship between a man and his wife. That's something that already exists. See, it's a warped version. All of this is a warped version of God's relationship, what God designed back in the Garden of Eden. It's totally crazy. He's trying to be God, but it's failing. And that is the point. You see, Xerxes looks powerful, but we're meant to see that he is shown to be a rich fool. Any move to replace ethics, to replace morals, to replace standards apart from God's word is simply a power play. There's lots of people trying to do that right now, aren't there? And as we see here, it ultimately doesn't work. People might think they're being smart, but in the end, it ends up being laughable. See, at the time, I reckon this was probably a pretty powerful, pretty daunting, perhaps scary decree. But can you see it? It's foolishness. It's laughable. You see, the point here isn't whether Vashti was right or Vashti was wrong to say no. I mean, some cultures would say, Vashti, you should have done what your husband said. Our Western liberal culture would have said, good on you, Vashti, poster girl for feminism. But that's not the point of the story here. If we pay attention to the text, all Vashti does is she says no. Now, the point of the story is that this powerful empire of the world, this world empire that demands our allegiance, that says, I'm so impressive, you can't escape, you want part of this. The point is that that is laughable. As we come to the end of chapter 1 of Esther, we're meant to be laughing. And the lesson here is that in a world that is missing God, laughter is perhaps the solution to fear. Laughter is perhaps the solution to fear. So who's really in control, eh? It's it's becoming quite apparent that it's not Xerxes. And placing this chapter before the main story of the book is really important for making that point. See, as we go through the rest of this story of Esther, we're meant to remember how clueless Xerxes is. We're meant to remember how foolish Xerxes is. And that's a reminder to us to instead remember that God is the true power. You see, moving away from biblical wisdom, it leads to mess. We've just seen that. And we're going to continue seeing that as we carry on through this book. But all the way through this, God is still working. Even in the absolute mess here, God works. We're going to see that in Esther. We're going to see the overt, the visible displays of power, supposed power. We're also going to see the covert, the hidden display of God's power. And there's just two small hints here. Two small hints in this passage that show that to us. Verse 19. Therefore, if it pleases the king, let him issue a royal decree and let it be written in the laws of Persia and Media, which cannot be repealed, that Vashti is never again to enter the presence of King Xerxes. Also, let the king give her royal position to someone else who is better than she. See, the royal position's been left open. This is not the first time that someone has said that a royal position should be given to someone better than them. It's exactly the same phrase spoken to King Saul about King David. A story that actually is really important to the book of Esther. At this stage, it's just a hint, but it's a hint that's going to be coincidentally bringing about Esther as the queen. One small hint, second small hint. I've already said that God can work in the mess of moving away from biblical wisdom. You see, this royal decree, although it's utterly stupid, in fact deals with a problem that Nehemiah, who's at the same time of Esther, and others at this time are dealing with. You see those final four words there. As God's people were assimilated into the world, into Xerxes' empire, one thing they did was to remove their language. As the people of Esther's day were marrying into the world around them, the language would have disappeared. The culture, the people would have disappeared. And those final four words here, this small part of the royal decree, it just happens to keep the identity going. Just like a small flame, almost extinguished, but now starting to burn once more. Using his native tongue. You see, as we carry on through this book, we're going to see that little note, you'll have to believe me right now, but you'll see as we go, these four words here become really important. More important than we might first think. We're going to see that the Jews, having their own script, having their own language, becomes really important. That's enough spoilers before we get there. But it does hint, doesn't it? At the fact that the world missing God, it might seem that there's real power, but the real power belongs with God. That is the power this world is longing for. And this evening, it's a reminder to us to remember that God is, in fact, the true power. So we have a powerful king, shown to be a rich fool. We have power in this missing God world, ending up showing itself in foolishness. And that is what the author wants us to see. So he wants his readers to not be duped by false power. He wants us to look at the world around us and see that it does look powerful. He wants us to see that situations do look hopeless. Even the fact there are desires to be in charge, to have power. But he wants us to see that all of that is bankrupt. All of it is really just a toddler in the pram throwing out their toys. It's like Xerxes when his wife doesn't do what he says. And that's still the same today. You see, I reckon that's a reason why we have TV shows like Have I Got News For You and things like that. They remind us that our rulers, that the powers of this world are ultimately funny. And you know, when you laugh at something, you stop being afraid of it. But they show, don't they, that the power of this world that can and does and really is scary can in fact be funny. See, we need to know that in a world that is missing God, in a world that says God's ways are stupid, in a world that tries to be doing things on their own, maybe the empire of this world that we live, for all of its visible impressiveness, is really not as powerful as we really think. And that means it would be a terrible decision to place your trust there. So See, this evening, don't be duped by false power. Whether that's God's people under Rome, God's people in Babylon, God's people today. There's one true power in this world, and we should live honouring that one true power. We should find confidence to stand for him in this world, fearing God instead of fearing man.
Thank you so much for listening. Any feedback or questions can be sent to podcast@david-couch.com, and I'll catch you again next time.